I have been criminally charged for voicing my deeply held beliefs that are based on classical Christianity.
Finnish lawmaker Dr. Pavi Rossinen, speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
If this kind of questioning of free speech is possible in a country like Finland, which has a long roots in Christian culture and values and good reputation regarding free speech internationally, the same could be possible anywhere.
You can watch and listen to Dr. Päivi Räsänen making the case for Christians in the public square from the 2022 Making the Case conference. For a $300 gift by Labor Day, you can access an on-demand video stream or podcast of the entire conference. Order today at issuesetc.org or by giving us a call, 618-223-8385. Well, it was confusing. Last night, the president was saying that the MAGA party, as he likes to refer to them, MAGA Republicans, former President Donald Trump and his supporters were a threat to democracy. By midday today, he was saying he never said that. In response to press inquiries about what he meant by saying it was a threat to democracy, he said he didn't believe any Trump supporters were a threat to democracy. So it's a little confusing as to what the president might have meant in his Soul of America speech last night. He certainly didn't say what he meant if he's telling the truth today. Well, is democracy under threat? And how should we understand statements that fall so easily from our mouths like fascist or fascism? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about democracy and President Biden's Soul of America speech, Kyle Mann, editor-in-chief at the Babylon Bee, co-author of the new book, The Babylon Bee Guide to Democracy, How to Flawlessly Rig Elections, Bribe Any Politician, and Crush Your Political Enemies for Good. Kyle, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again.
I want to begin by listening to an excerpt from the president's Soul of America speech last night and getting your reaction.
With three simple words, we the people, we the people. These two documents and the ideas they embody, equality and democracy, are the rock upon which this nation is built. They're how we became the greatest nation on earth. They're why, for more than two centuries, America has been a beacon to the world. But as I stand here tonight, equality and democracy are under assault. We do ourselves no favor to pretend otherwise.
So, Kyle, what is your general response to President's speech last night?
Well, I think it would have sounded better in German. Did you need more than that, or is that good? I mean, it's the political game. It's what American politics has kind of devolved into is your enemies are Nazis and, you know, your enemies have to be silenced. Your enemies are not Americans. You know, your enemies oppose democracy. That's, you know, and this is on both sides. We've kind of lost the core values and the core traditions that used to unite us. We don't have similar beliefs any longer, to the point where you almost have two different nations kind of all smashed together into one. It's concerning, you know, it is really concerning when you hear such a dark and divisive speech like that, and you have half the nation praising it as presidential, and the other half of the nation calling it out as dark and divisive. So it's like, which is it? It's two different realities, and that's just increasingly become the case. So yeah, obviously you could draw a lot of parallels to fascist dictators and how they gave speeches like this. And it's not like Biden's writing his own speeches anyway. He probably doesn't even remember it. But
you use the word fascist. What does that mean in American parlance today? I know what it means in history. You can look it up and you could find terrible examples of fascist governments. What does it mean in America today?
Yeah, I mean, I think when the president is unilaterally spending trillions of dollars, when he's unilaterally taking military action, which has been going on for 20 years, you know, when he's just issuing executive orders without even going to Congress, I think a lot of that started during the Bush administration and Obama went even crazier with it. And, you know, to be fair, I don't think Trump did too much to roll that kind of stuff back. You know, you have a single dictator who's making all these decisions, you know, and obviously it's not, I don't want to say this is as bad as Nazi Germany or something. We can sound a little bit too much like we have a persecution complex sometimes, of course, but I think you can look at some of those scary parallels to fascism in history. And when you have a president who's just kind of got this one party, one man rule, and the other side of it is you look at the way that they address controversies, that they address real problems that our Americans are facing, like inflation, and they say, no, there is no inflation. What you are seeing is not reality. You get into a very 1984 kind of dystopia where truth is not truth and you have to deny what's in front of your very eyes. Those are the elements, I think. You have the lying, you have the gaslighting, you have the ever-expanding executive power. What's the other one? The Inflation Reduction Act that hires 90,000 new IRS agents and spends $800 billion on climate issues. How is that an Inflation Reduction Act? You know, it's not. And that's the kind of lying that we're seeing from the federal government. And they just don't care anymore. It used to be that you kind of had to work with the other side. You had to, like, be careful not to be too aggressive with your policies because you had to work together. And this party and this president or whoever's controlling this president simply don't care about that stuff anymore. They just want to ram their agenda through no matter what.
Historically, fascists have opposed basically First Amendment freedoms like freedom of speech, freedom of exercise of religion, freedom of the press. So who are the ones opposing these First Amendment rights in America today?
Well, you definitely see that on the side of the Democrats nowadays. A lot of it is kind of couched in language like, let's stop extremist speech. You know, that was a lot of Biden's speech last night was, we have to unite against extremists. And that's step one, and that's fascism 101 when you look at it, because that's the kind of stuff that dictators do. First, you have to kind of other the political opposition. Call your dissidents these, oh, they're crazy extremists. You know, you blame them for violence. And Biden did that a lot last night. We need to condemn violence together as a nation. You know, it's something nobody would support. Nobody, except a very small fraction of people, would say that they're okay with violence. And yet, you know, he kind of frames it like everybody who's against his agenda is pro-violence. So you can see a lot of parallels with the rise of Hitler and Nazi Germany to saying that his political opponents are responsible for terrorist acts. So that's a scary thing. You can just draw so many of these parallels as you see this kind of thing unfolding before our eyes.
My observation on last night's speech is that Biden has kind of become the thing he despises. He kind of went into full Trump mode last night. He demagogued and gave his audience permission to despise their political opponents, which is precisely what Trump spent 4 years doing. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, he's got everything except the orange hair, I think, and the orange skin at this point. But it's true. I mean, there is a sense in which the very thing that they thought Trump was, and I'm not saying that Trump didn't have some of those tendencies or was, you know, in my view, Trump was fairly harmless in that he was, I think he did stumble into those kind of egotistical demagogue sounding moments, but you almost felt like he came by them honestly, like he was just kind of a big egotistical guy, and he wasn't like, he didn't have this grand master plan to expand his powers and take over the country. But with Biden, you definitely feel like the administration has this agenda in mind, you know, this globalist agenda, this climate agenda that most Americans don't care about, that they want to push through. And now he's adopting that language in order to rile up that base. You know, it almost felt like, I don't know how you feel about this, but it almost felt like he was trying to encourage violent resistance. And you could see some person who's kind of not mentally all there seeing that speech and saying, this justifies violence from my side. And that's not right. Obviously, we condemn that. But I think it almost felt like he's asking for it. That's a scary thing, you know, when he can play that game of chicken with, you know, any of the crazies who might be out there. It's frightening for sure.
My theory is that he had a twofold audience. One, the far left of his base. They needed to hear this from him because they were kind of flagging in their support for him. And this was tailor-made for them. And the other audience was Donald Trump himself. I think he's trying to goad the former president into announcing before the midterms because I think he thinks that works in his favor. That's pretty cynical, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's cynical, but I think we've earned the right to be cynical about this administration. I don't, you know, is it really cynicism when it's just a realism from what we've seen? I don't know. I think if we've got the observational experience to back things up, I don't know that really comes across as cynicism. We're just being reasonable here.
How do you explain what everybody calls the optics? And that is, obviously, these things are thought of down to the smallest detail when you're going to have a president who never makes or seldom makes addresses like this in prime time. You're going to make the most of it. How do you explain the way the thing looked to the average person out there?
Well, I thought the parade of Panzer tanks and SS troops was a little bit much. But I do think that the look was intentional, obviously. But I don't know. I mean, I don't think it helps them to make him look like a dictator. So I don't know why nobody saw that. I do think there's a sense in which the people in Washington, D.C., you know, specifically those in power right now, they're in a bit of a bubble. You know, they think that everybody adores Biden. You know, they think that he's seen as, all the news stories that have been going around the last few weeks, like Biden bounces back, he recovers, you know, Biden saves his presidency. And you're like, he's done some of the worst things in his presidency right now. So I don't know. There is a sense in which I think they do think it makes him look strong and powerful and not this weak president that he'd been made out to be. So it's definitely intentional on that part. I don't know that they were going for the Nazi Germany connection. I don't think anybody would do that on purpose. But
well, they can't call him the comeback kid because, and being old myself, they wouldn't call me a kid either. But they're trying to shape a narrative that the president is kind of on the way back and regaining his footing. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, that is the narrative that they're trying to put out there, that he's been a weak president, he had all these issues, but he's back. You know, he's got the student loan forgiveness, you know, Inflation Reduction Act. Most middle Americans, I think, would look at that and say that these are disastrous things that are going to motivate me to vote against him. But in the bubble of 95% leftist Washington, D.C., they think we're doing something. It's a win. There, you know, there's like two kinds of people, right? When somebody says the government does something, like half the people recoil in horror, and the other half of the people cheer and say, great, finally, the government's doing something. So it really depends on where you sit on that spectrum that's going to determine if you think it's a comeback or or just even the worst part of the nadir of his presidency.
We're talking to Kyle Mann of the Babylon Bee. President Biden's State of America speech and democracy is our subject. This is Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Ad Crucem is Latin for to the cross. Ad Crucem grew out of a frustration with the tacky Christian gift market. The mission of Ad Crucem is to provide unique, high-quality products and services that confess the one true Christian faith. Check out their greeting cards, church banners, jewelry, posters, fine art, and more at adcrucem.com. ADCRUCEM.com. When we return, I'll ask Kyle if he thinks democracy is under threat, and if so, how? Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's life ministry is thousands of people sharing Christ's love and mercy and giving witness to our Lord's creation of life, His design for marriage and the family, and the God-given value of all human life from conception to natural death. Working with many partners, LCMS Life Ministry sponsors human care efforts that meet the needs of body and soul and provides resources and educational events for all ages. To learn more, email lifeministry@lcms.org and visit lcms.org/life.
Memoria Press exists to promote and impart the classical heritage of the Christian West through an emphasis on the liberal arts and the great works of the Western tradition. The Memoria Press curriculum encourages the development of wisdom and virtue through the pursuit of truth, goodness, and beauty. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR22. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time. MemoriaPress.com.
Not everyone is comfortable with new technology. Dial-A Podcast gives all generations of your congregation an easy way to hear your sermons, or even devotionals and Bible studies. Once you've completed a simple one-time setup, we take care of the rest. All your congregants have to do is dial the number from any phone to listen to your latest podcast, all at no additional cost to them. Dial-A Podcast. Extend the reach of your sermons. Get started at dialapodcast.com now.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Not only does our church need men right now, but the world needs men who will proclaim the gospel in its purity.
Issues, Etc. regular guest, Dr. Peter Scare, Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
If when you go to sleep at night, you're thinking about it, my experience with it is this, is that thought won't go away. So if you're going to bed at night thinking about following our Lord and becoming a preacher of this gospel, then I would love if you could come and visit Fort Wayne, our campus. We'd love to show you around and show you what it is that we do.
Have you ever considered becoming a pastor? Contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu. Christ-centered, cross-focused, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Welcome back. We're talking about democracy and President Biden's Soul of America speech. Kyle Mann, editor-in-chief of the Babylon Bee, is our guest. So on the subject of the day, Kyle, do you think that democracy is under threat? And if so, how?
I mean, if it is, it's under threat from the left. And that is the weirdest thing to me when, you know, if you go browse lefty Twitter and you see the talking points, you know, they really are under the impression that like we are going to lose our democracy to right-wing Trump fascists any day now. That is the talking point. Like that is what they think. Like we have come so close to losing our democracy. And I'm sitting here like, I don't see it. I don't see it from that side. I see it from the president who's spending trillions and trillions of our grandchildren's dollars and enslaving them to be in debt forever, perpetually in debt. Who's deflating the value of our currency so people will be poorer in the future and are poorer now, who's intentionally being the cost of gasoline so that people will drive cars less in favor of his climate agenda, hurting the poor far more than it hurts the rich. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that dictators are made of. And it's weird to me that you would see it from the other, not you, but you know, that somebody would see it from the other side. I don't understand the argument that because Trump was mean, or you had the protests on January 6th, like that was close to losing our democracy in their mind, and I don't really think it was. So I mean, but I'm not an alarmist. Like I don't think we're losing our democracy to the same degree that the crazies on the left think we're losing our democracy to the right. I mean, there is, you know, every branch of government save for maybe the Supreme Court is controlled by Democrats right now, and a lot of them far left Democrats. And their talking point is, you know, the right wing is about to steal your rights away and institute one party rule. And you're like, what? Like, what are you talking about? It's just, it's completely so far removed from reality that it's ridiculous on its face.
Talk about some of the censorship challenges that the Babylon Bee has been facing over the last couple of years.
Well, we've run into censorship issues with just about every major social media platform. We encounter it all the time. Our very first one was when we did an article that CNN purchased a giant washing machine to spin the news. And Snopes fact-checked that. And Facebook then cites Snopes fact-check automatically and then dings our page for sharing misinformation. So the most bizarre chain of events that for some reason Snopes thought it was a good idea to fact-check this clearly satirical, over-the-top, insane article. And then Facebook decides to ding us for that kind of a dumb joke and say that we're sharing misinformation, and then we get threatened with deplatforming and demonetization for that. So that was kind of the start of it for us when we first started to see like what the real challenges of writing satire, especially satire from the right, was going to be as we ran this website. So we didn't really expect to be thrown into this part of the culture war. We didn't found the site and say, we're going to fight for free speech with comedy. You know, it was just, let's write some funny jokes about politics, pop culture, church life, general life. That was just kind of the goal. We just want to put some humor out in the world. And we suddenly found ourselves on the front of this culture war. The most recent example is that we were famously locked out of Twitter for a post where we called Rachel Levine a man. We gave Rachel Levine the transgender, what is she, Deputy Secretary of Health and Human Services in the Biden administration. We gave Rachel Levine our Man of the Year award. And this was a parody of USA Today, which had given Rachel Levine their Woman of the Year award. So to us, it was kind of a dumb on-the-nose joke where we're just like, well, if you're going to call this biological male your Woman of the Year, we're going to give Rachel Levine our Man of the Year award. And it was a little silly, but Twitter then locked us out and said we had committed hateful conduct for this. They won't let us back into our Twitter account unless we bend the knee. We have to click on a button acknowledging that we've committed hateful conduct, which, according to the description, includes like calling for violence against people and degrading people. And we're like, this is insane, you know? And again, we weren't trying to make this big cultural stand. We just said, you know, enough is enough. We're not going to apologize and manually delete this tweet and click a button saying that we're, you know, hateful bigots just because we told a joke, which is clearly a joke, calling a man a man. And so we've been locked out of our Twitter account now for, I think, 6 months for that. And we're not gonna bend on that. So even if we're never back on Twitter again, we're gonna do that. And I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good practice that more Christians and more conservatives should take up as, you know, don't be afraid of cancel culture. Don't be afraid of, you know, losing your job. Like, call a spade a spade, call a man a man. I think that's a good line in the sand to draw for us.
So what do you think is going on? These things are, we're always told that it's the algorithms, but what do you think is going on inside social media platforms like Twitter or Facebook that essentially have banned conservative humor in your case?
I mean, there's a bunch of factors. There are some issues where there's an algorithm that doesn't from our perspective, being, you know, humorists, it's doubly challenging because algorithms don't understand comedy. They don't understand humor. So we did an article where we said that Senator Hirono said that ACB needed to be weighed against a duck to see if she's a witch, which is a Monty Python reference for those who haven't watched Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And in the little poll quote, we said, we must burn the witch or something. The algorithm decided that we were calling for violence against Senator Hirono, which, you know, it's not even, the joke is about her saying that to Amy Coney Barrett, but that's beside the point. We got flagged by this algorithm. So then we appealed it and we had multiple people, human beings supposedly, manually reviewing this and upholding the deletion of this post and the dinging of our account for the downgrading of our account or whatever for sharing something that's hateful, a call for violence. We had multiple people at Facebook review this and say, yes, this is a good deletion. So what is that? Is that the first one I can say, I'm willing to say, yeah, that's just a mistake. It's just an algorithm being dumb. But the second one, It's hard for me to see how that's not some political motivation that they don't want to back down when they ban or censor conservatives. But I mean, we've seen, and we'll see more and more exposing of this, especially as the Elon Musk possible purchase of Twitter conversation continues. I think we'll see more and more exposing of just how far left the employees are. Like, they think that they're doing a good thing by banning you. They don't understand why we're upset about that. Like, they're like, well, you're an extremist. We're doing a good thing. We're doing a public service by banning you. You know, and you can see that anytime a conservative gets banned, go on lefty Twitter and there are people praising it. You know, great, we got them banned. I mean, they do whole reporting brigades, like, let's report this for hate speech. They think it's a good thing. What's the C.S. Lewis quote about the worst tyrant is the one who does it for your own good because he does so with the approval of his own conscience, you know? And I think that's what we're seeing from big tech right now.
Speaking of media, I really wanted your thoughts on the so-called house cleaning at CNN. New leadership, a lot of the mainstays, albeit very poorly rated, but mainstays of their programming either fired or leaving. There was another one today. What are your thoughts there?
We're going to be making some hires here at the Babylon Bee, it sounds like, because I think we can get some good satirists from CNN, you know. We won't even have to parody the leftist voice anymore. We can just hire Brian Stelter and have him write it, and I think we'll save a lot of money that way. But no, I mean, what, you know, this is like where the cold reality of how what they're doing is not popular hits, you know, meets the road of what, of how popular they think it is or how good they think it is for the world. Like, they think that they're doing this good and this public service by doing all this lefty news, putting all this lefty news out there, and we're fighting Trump, we're fighting fascism, and blah, blah, blah. Well, the reality is, you know, if you're not getting viewers, you're going to go under. And so I think they're realizing that in a very painful way. You know, there's a lot of lefty outlets that wouldn't make it if it wasn't for being subsidized by, ironically, you know, billionaires. So, but, you know, once that support, even that support will dry up at some point, and they'll realize, you know, that they don't have that kind of influence. But it's part of a larger shift. You know, it is part of the shift from having gatekeepers of news to having ordinary people discuss events and what they think. And this is why they hate guys like Joe Rogan, you know, who goes out there and just, he doesn't even agree with us on a lot of things, but is willing to talk. And I think that's when you start to see the conversation shift in the way people consume news and get information. You know, I think there's some hope there.
Kyle Mann is our guest editor-in-chief at the Babylon Bee. We're talking about democracy and President Biden's Soul of America speech. Wonder what the most insane element of our political process is right now. We'll find out next.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we move further into Genesis with creation of man, blessed Sabbath, the breath of life, to work and to keep, and a helper. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod cares deeply for those who protect our nation. Are you or a loved one currently serving? Ministry to the Armed Forces would like to help. We provide devotional literature to encourage faith. Send your mailing address to lcmschaps@lcms.org or call us at 314-996-1337. Those in uniform are comforted with Psalm 28. The Lord is my strength and my shield. My heart trusts in Him and He helps me.
When pastors talk about us, they say ad crucem. When laity mention us, they say ad crucem. When telemarketers call us, they say ADC Rucam. But a Luther rose by any name will smell as sweet. Ad crucem is the place to go for greeting cards and artwork, jewelry and ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and much more. Visit adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
For nearly 140 years, the Lutheran Witness has taught the faith, defended it against error, and shown forth the great treasures of the Lutheran Church and biblical doctrine. We're continuing this legacy by publishing issues and articles that help you see the world from a Lutheran perspective and that teach biblical doctrine and show forth the treasures of God's Word. Visit our website to learn more and how to subscribe, witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Truth, freedom, and vocation are the pillars of a Concordia University Chicago education. Through them, we form our students for lives of influence and service for the common good. This is the education American society needs right now. I'm Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, and I invite you to visit us to discover what it means for truth, freedom, and vocation to become the pillars of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Terry Mattingly is the eternal boomer. In other words, he, due to the circumstances of his birth, is lame.
Here's some feedback from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Terry can be counted on to deliver his boring, blasé take in his irritatingly pseudo-profound fashion. Anyway, lame. May God have mercy on Terry and Issues Etc. You're all a bunch of lame boomers.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
You can watch and listen to Bill Barr, Albert Moeller, Pavi Rossinen, Chris Roseborough, Brian Wolfmiller, Will Whedon, and Joel Bierman from the 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. We'll send you a link and password for a donation of $300 by Labor Day. Make your secure online order at issuesetc.org or by giving us a call, 618-223-8385. We're talking about democracy and President Biden's Soul of America speech with Kyle Mann, author of the new book, Babylon Bee: Guide to Democracy. Kyle, what do you think is the most insane element of our political process right now?
I think that the worst part of American politics, if I can frame it that way, I guess, is how centralized power has become and how much importance has been weighted into the presidency, Congress, the Supreme Court, and even within the states, you know, the governors and their levels of power that went way up during the pandemic too, obviously. I think that is the part that is the scariest. G.K. Chesterton had a quote about politics that was, "Keep the politicians near enough to kick them," he said. And he also said, I'm going to butcher this quote, but he said something about the politician that is in the town square can be hung from the tree in the town square, hanged from the tree in the town square. And then he said something like, and just know this is not an endorsement of political violence, but he said, it's a pity how few politicians are hanged. You know, and I think there is something funny there, obviously. I think he's being a little tongue in cheek, but there's also this truth that we have unaccountable politicians. My representative doesn't represent me. He doesn't care about me. I'm in California, and you know, I don't know how many, but he probably represents millions of people or hundreds of thousands of people or whatever. He doesn't know who I am. He lives in Washington, D.C. most of the year. And there's something broken about that. There's something broken about that when you have the people making the most important decisions for us, living so far removed from the reality of their constituents. I would love if local politics were once again to reign supreme as the most important thing. We shouldn't have to care about who the president is. We shouldn't have to care about who the governor is. I didn't even know who Governor Newsom was of California until the pandemic happened. You know, I didn't really follow things that closely. Wait, who's our governor again? And was there just an election? I don't know. And then, you know, I'm sure that's true of a lot of other people that were just living their lives in Michigan and all of a sudden realized that the Queen of Narnia had been elected governor. And that's a scary thing to me. I think when people that are so far removed from you are making that big of decisions over your life.
Former House Majority Leader and Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill from the 70s, observed famously that all politics is local. Has the advent of the internet and 24-hour news cycle turned that completely on its head so that now all politics are national?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's That's why one isolated incident, whether that's something like, say, the Kyle Rittenhouse shooting or the George Floyd killing or what's the kid's name, Nick Sandman and the gentleman that went up and accosted him in D.C., you know, that's why these, which would normally just be little local stories that would go through the justice system or whatever needs to happen or the civil system, now become these flashpoints for us to argue online. And it's not healthy. I do think 24-hour news, the cable news in the 90s, leading to social media news today, is really what has driven that degradation of the discussion. I mean, think about it. If you read local news, you're going to be much happier with your life than if you're in touch with what's going on. Because then, I don't know, I think about it from a spiritual perspective. Like, I don't think God designed us to carry the weight of every crisis going on all around the world at all times, 24 hours a day. That's not what we were designed for. Obviously, God has tremendous grace on us when we're under certain pressures, and there's been horrible times in world history where there's war or famine and disease, and then all of a sudden those things come to your doorstep, and God will give you the grace to get through that, obviously, or you know, whatever his plan is for you. But we're bringing on ourselves all this stress, anxiety, and just really negative things, I think, that God had never intended for us to deal with on that scale.
One more question on the media. What do you make of the media's use of terms like protests and insurrection?
Well, it's all part of the game. I mean, that's mostly peaceful protest when you burn down an Arby's for social justice, and dangerous insurrection when you had the majority of the people walking through the Capitol building being led in by police and walking around. And I don't know if I'm allowed to even say that, but you had, I mean, obviously, I don't think anybody looks at the people who went overboard on January 6th, you know, or at least vast majority of people on the right don't look at that and go like, that was a good thing. You know, obviously, you shouldn't have been breaking into people's offices and stealing lecterns and the kind of extremes that some of those people went to. But you can look at Antifa was trying to do stuff like that during the Trump presidency. And, you know, they were burning down churches in D.C. and burning down things all across the land. And it's called peaceful protests or protests for social justice. It's just all part of the game. If you can label it a certain way, then that, I mean, that circles back to the beginning of our discussion about fascism. If you can say my opponents are executing an insurrection, they're enacting an insurrection against the government, well, now that justifies your power grab. And so that's why they frame things that way, whereas the ones that are convenient for them, the other direction, they just minimize and soften by saying they're just some kind of nonviolent resistance or protest.
Returning for a moment to fascism, most conservatives favor small, limited government. Doesn't fascism itself, if it's going to be implemented, require large authoritarian government?
Yeah, that's why it doesn't make any sense. And I'm not going to say that Republicans as a whole or Trump during his time in office perfectly represented conservatism. But I think in general, the base agrees with, you know, if you polled Republicans more government or less, they would say at least on paper less, you know, give me less government, give me local government, give me smaller government. I don't want the big bloated bureaucracy in D.C. Like, we're against all that stuff. So I think at least on paper, they agree with that. You know, and now you can say, well, then why do you elect, you know, someone that can be depicted as a demagogue like Trump? And, you know, that's a fine discussion to have. But that would be an incongruity with their actual beliefs of saying, I'm against that. You know, I don't think they would take fascism on those terms. But yeah, you know, it depends on the person. And Republicans haven't done themselves any favors, of course, by enabling kind of the slow expansion of federal power. Through George W. Bush and such, you didn't see that push towards smaller government. You know, it's just, what's the line? I don't remember who originally said it, but conservatives just being liberals in slow motion. You know, I think that does apply to a lot of career Republican politicians in D.C. right now.
Everybody claims to be concerned about election integrity, both sides of the political spectrum. Do you believe that our elections are actually vulnerable to rigging or hacking or some kind of manipulation?
I don't know. you know, I'm not an election security expert. I write jokes on the internet, but I do think it's weird that you can't ask that question. Like, if you're conservative, you can't say, yeah, there's some funny business going on. Can we take a look at this? Can we inspect it? And you're just like, no, it was like Biden's speech last night was, you know, we can't question our institutions. You're like, well, but that's an American value, is questioning our institutions. That's what we're supposed to be doing. So it's just weird to me that you can't ask the question. And there's also the double standard where you have Stacey Abrams and Hillary Clinton claiming that elections were stolen and there was no concerns, no misinformation labels on Twitter, no Facebook fact checks when they claim that. You know, you had the whole fake Russian investigation that Democrats started, and that's fine. And then the Mueller report comes back and says, nope, there wasn't anything there. It was all kind of a hoax. And there's no apologies, there's no fact checks, it's all just kind of swept under the rug. But then Trump, yeah, maybe a little bit over the top in his in his rhetoric about the election being stolen. He says that, and then it's just like, ban him from all social media. You can't possibly question it when we win. So I think the double standard bugs a lot of people too.
So why do you think millions of readers love the Babylon Bee and will thoroughly enjoy the Babylon Bee Guide to Democracy?
Because we are hilarious, man. We're so funny. The Babylon Bee, I think, is really resonates with a lot of people because we've been able to kind of cut through a lot of the noise of discussion and just provide some humor. It's the Onion model where you've got a real sounding headline and there's a little twist in there. And I think that's great in the social media age because people scroll on their Facebook feed and they're, like we were talking about earlier, getting all anxious about this news all over the world. And then you spot a Babylon Bee headline and you can go, what the heck? And then you look at it and, oh, it's a joke. And I think it can kind of insert itself into the discussion and deflate tension rather than increase it, at least is the hope. So the Babylon Bee Guide to Democracy, we took a lot of that style of humor. It's a very dry explainer. So we act like we're teaching you about the U.S. government, but we inject it with cynicism, humor, satire, exaggeration. There's illustrations on every page, sometimes extremely complex and detailed illustrations that took us way too long to do, but we custom drew almost everything in the book. We have stick figures showing you how to do an insurrection. We have stick figures showing you how to rig an election. We have stick figure fights where we show you how to destroy a Republican or destroy a Democrat or destroy a Libertarian. It's kind of one of those, what do you call them, the four dummies guides, but way insane, over the top, funny, and just a lot of fun thing, a big fun thing to have on the coffee table. We have, we already had the Babylon Bee Guide to Wokeness. So this is the second in the series, and that Wokeness was a national bestseller. So we're just looking to continue the series going with more and more of these Babylon Bee guides.
You can purchase the Babylon Bee Guide to Democracy at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Kyle Mann is editor-in-chief at the Babylon Bee and co-author of the new book, Babylon Bee Guide to Democracy, How to Flawlessly Rig Elections, Bribe Any Politician, and Crush Your Political Enemies for Good. Kyle, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Up next on Issues Etc., we'll look forward to Sunday morning with Dr. Carl Frequentier of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. We'll be discussing the cost of discipleship in Luke chapter 14. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay with us.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God and His will. ways.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel. More than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for You and the Divine Service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org. St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.
Bahama Mama, Ocean Pacific, Paradise Island. Retreat from the heat with a shaved ice snow cone from Tropical Snow in Caseyville, Illinois. It's right across the street from Collinsville High School. Tropical Snow is open weekdays from 1 to 9 and weekends from noon to 9. Premium snow, epic flavors, lots of love. Tropical Snow across the street from Collinsville High School at 2134 South Morrison Avenue in Caseyville.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.